The reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 9, entitled Pranas Prayers for Created Energy, Text Number 9.
Yavat pritatva midamatmana indriyata.
Yavat pritatva midamatmana indriyata.
Maya bhavam bhagavato janai sapasye.
Maya bhavam bhagavato.
Tavanna samsrite raso prati sankramita.
Tavanna samsrite raso prati sankramita.
Yatati dukkha nivam vahati kriyata.
Yatati dukkha nivam vahati
kriyata.
Yava.
As long as.
As long as.
Pritakam
separatism.
Separatism.
Idam
this.
Atmanaha
of the body.
Of the body.
Indriyarta.
Indriyarta.
The sense gratification.
Maya balam.
Maya balam.
Influence of external energy.
Influence of external energy.
Bhagavata.
Bhagavata.
Of the personality of Godhead.
Of the personality of Godhead.
Janha.
Janha.
A person.
A person.
Isha.
Isha.
Oh my Lord.
Oh my Lord.
Pasye.
Pasye.
Sees.
Sees.
Tava.
Tava.
So long.
So long.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Not.
Samsthiti.
Samsthiti.
The influence of the material energy.
The influence of the material energy.
I'm sorry, it says the influence of material existence.
Asu.
That man.
Pratisankrameta.
Pratisankrameta.
Can overcome.
Can overcome.
Yattapi.
Although without meaning.
Although without meaning.
Dukkani
vaham.
Multiple miseries.
Bhati.
Bhati.
Bringing.
Bringing.
Kriyata.
Kriyata.
For fruit of result.
For fruit of activity.
My mind's in a lazy mood, it doesn't want to read. As soon as it sees something, it already thinks it knows what it is. Translation. Oh my Lord, the material miseries are without factual existence for the soul. Yet as long as the conditioned soul sees the body as meant for sense enjoyment, you cannot get out of the entanglement of material miseries being influenced by your external The whole trouble of the living entity in material existence is that he has an independent conception of life. He's always dependent on the rules of the Supreme Lord in both the conditioned and liberated states. But by the influence of the external energy, the conditioned soul thinks himself independent of the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of God. His constitutional position is to dovetail himself with the desire of the Supreme Will, but as long as he does not do so, he's sure to drag on in the shackles of material bondage. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 255, he has to give up all sorts of plans manufactured by mental concoction. The living entity has to dovetail himself with the Supreme Will. That will help him to get out of the entanglement of material existence. So the purport. The beginning of the purport is very nice. The whole trouble of the living entity in material existence is that he has an independent conception of life. So it says basically an independent conception, which means it doesn't mean that he has a tendency to be independent. It just thinks that he thinks that he can be independent. Yeah? That's the problem. He has an independent conception of life. He thinks he can be independent. And he just forgets that he's totally dependent. all alone, every step of the way. And he can only choose to be dependent on the interior energy of the Lord or on the external energy of the Lord. And the external energy is a bed of nails, is a path of thorns, right? Which is difficult to walk. But it says that by the shoes of surrender to the Supreme Lord, one will be protected on the path of material life, which is full of thorns, material life. So this is Maya. Maya is not that we are feeling material desire, etc. That's not Maya. Maya is that we think that we can be successful in fulfilling it. That is Maya. The material desire, the illusory energy, is very strong and it produces wonderful, wonderful forms. But we should know that whatever our eyes tell us, it's a lie. These eyes tell only lies. That's it. That is the fact. Right? We should not believe what we see. We should not accept the signals. This is great. No, there is nothing great in the material world. It is just always too much or never enough. That is the material energy. Right? And both these things simultaneously. It is like that. So therefore, we have to, in order to go to the spiritual platform, we have to say goodbye. Goodbye to all my hopes, right? Goodbye to my hopes for a happy life in this world. Goodbye, you know. Whatever comes, comes. You know, if Krishna wants to send me wonderful material facilities, I will accept, but not get too excited. Okay? And if Krishna sends me lots of difficulties, it was to be expected in the first place, that now he's reminding me of the true nature of material existence, a heavy place. Right? So, but fortunately, he has given us the transcendental vision by which we understand that we have no true relationship with the body. It's not so easy to remember that. And I'm thinking of the condition of Gajendra. Gajendra, a spirit soul who somehow or other had been captured in the gross body of an elephant. Can you imagine a soul covered by many layers of fat and thick skin and a dull brain and all kinds of elephantine instincts, right? Was somehow attracted to female elephants, right? Which from our point of view is a little difficult, but from the elephant point of view, it seemed certainly very wonderful. And just that form of the female elephants, right? The way they walked, captures his mind. And brought him to the point of desiring to enjoy. And there he went on the heavenly path, Trikuta Mountain, nice, beautiful lake, all kinds of heavenly birds, heavenly swans, charvakras, different kinds of cranes. My God, what a place it was, right? Chirping birds and butterflies and remaining flowers and fragrant breezes and perfect temperature, of course, and right there and then, a little water sports, right? So he went into the water for sporting with the ladies, and time seemed to have no meaning at all, right? It was beyond description, practically speaking. And suddenly, I just put the scarf, and that's how I came on this idea. There was a crocodile hanging on his leg, you know. That's actually, to tell you the truth, this is what inspired me, this idea. There was a crocodile hanging on his leg, right? And this crocodile was biting ruthlessly in his leg. And somewhere, that
in the big battle that was taking place, and the intense suffering, and the great despair, and the surprise that me, with my great, great power, in spite of the fact that I am naturally powerful and in control of everything, I am losing it. I am really losing me. It's a big success. Me, we can always do with anything and everything. I'm losing it. In that stage, and the despair that hit him, the fear that overcame him at that point in time, brought out some sort of, through all the thick layers of the body, the gross and subtle one in him, brought back some memory of the Lord. So, yam vapi smaram bhavam, this is where I want to go, that we are also placed in a particular hunk of flesh, right? Bile, mucus, fat, and all kinds of layers, right? That cover the soul, and then a thick false ego, thick like a brick, right? It is sitting there, and we have to, through all that, try and figure out what is reality with the limited capacity of the body that we have attained due to our karma. And from that platform, we're looking at the world, just saying, "Well, this is good and that's not good, etc." So, considering all that, we are in a hopeless position. Hopeless position. All covered over by gross substances, which sometimes come out of the openings in the body at different points in time to remind us what it is. And somehow or other, the natural functions of the soul have become limited by this body. So therefore, it's a struggle to overcome this ignorance. If we don't fight, then we'll go down into the material age. Unless we overcome our natural tendency to be weak, there is no one who is strong. There are people who post strong, but no one is strong on his own. Strength comes only from Krishna. By nature, no one in the material world is strong. It is only by having a connection with Krishna that we have strength. Krishna is the source of strength. Without Krishna, there is no strength. All determination is false. Based on false ego. Based on... if one is so determined to try in his spiritual life, but he doesn't have dependence on Krishna, then that determination is all for showing off one's own glory to others. That's all it is. If one is not determined to please Krishna and determined to somehow or other get the mercy of Krishna by connecting with the desire of Krishna, and not only verbatim by the letter of the law, but taking the spirit of the law and trying to understand what Krishna really wants, and then act upon that. What does the spiritual master really want? The best disciple is one who is thinking, what would he really want from me? Not even what is he saying to me, but what does he really want from me? That's a level higher, because what he's saying may be, well, considering the conditioning of the disciple, and considering that this, how much can he take this disciple? Don't let me push too hard and put a big order on his head, because if he doesn't follow, he'll only get involved in entangled in offense. So I don't want to give him too much of a heavy order. But on the other hand, what does the spiritual master really want? First class disciple is trying to understand that principle and try and please in that way. And try and please the Lord in that way, by getting the true spirit of the instructions of the Lord. I find that Srila Prabhupada is the perfect example of that. Because many times when I'm thinking of the order of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, they were only he repeated the order twice, to preach in the English language, So what does that really mean? You know, like,
well, you know, you could take that in many ways, right? You could take it like, well, I should at least give a lecture in English, you know, give an English lecture. Okay, done. What's the next thing, you know? Next. I'm finished with this. Or you could say, well, okay, I'll preach in English, you know. But to take it in the spirit of going to the English-speaking world and giving them everything and then saying, well, English is the language of the world, therefore really it means preach to the whole world and then get everything translated in another 70 languages as well. I call that an extended interpretation of the original order, right? I mean, he really extended the meaning there of what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said. He did not take it according to the letter of the instruction. He penetrated deep into the spirit of the instruction and then just went for it. Went for it. And with much less material facility than we have, because Prabhupada came at an old age, with an old body. None of us is as old and worn out and sickly as Prabhupada was. I mean, two heart attacks and all that. Right? Old age and just struggling on. Right? And then no support, all alone. And in this way, not looking at the external energy. So this is required, that we spiritual life means a reorientation. Remembering a little bit what we heard from Vitadaja Maharaj about, who spent quite some time, about the addiction, right? But we can say yes, so for someone who is an addict, there is a question of reorientation. Yes, at one point, if he wants to break the habit, right, then he has to kind of stop everything and say, I got stuck in a dead end with my life. I got in a dead end and now I turn around and where am I going now? So this is very much what we have to do. As long as we think that we can continue what we were doing before but add a Krishna conscious flavor to it, right, then we are only in the preliminary stages of devotional service. Sometimes we do preach like that. But just add Krishna to your life. Right? Just add Krishna to your life. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that actually, right, it is not some sort of adjustment that we want to make. Right? We don't want to make some sort of adjustment in our life. Right? And say like, well, we tried to be happy in the past, in the material world, in this way, and now, you know, you stop doing certain things, you do other things, and you'll be much happier. Yeah? No, that's not at all our aim. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, our aim is a total revolution. Total. Total revolution. Now, it doesn't have to be so dramatic that one does that in the spirit of storming the palace and overthrowing everything that is there, right? And kind of smashing everything, and then here is the new form. It can be done at a very gradual pace. Right? It can be done gradually, and the Vedic culture is very gradual. The Sankirtan movement is not as gradual as the Vedic culture. Right? Vedic culture is slowly preparing everyone step by step, bending a little bit, training, preparing. Now, you know, you're getting in the right frame of mind, and now take a step forward to more commitment to Krishna and less commitment to the material energy, right? But don't take too much pain. First, when you do take sannyas, first you go in Kutichak, and you know, they bring you still food from the village, etc. Then, you know, okay, you go to the next stage, right? You start doing some madhukari, bow duck, and like that, you know. You first work out your own kind of security so you're comfortable, and then, you know, you throw yourself in that, in the fire and total dependence on Krishna. Just an example. The Sankirtan movement is more
Well, there is an element of a shock treatment in there, you know. Like, you join, and it's like, you know, it's intense. It's super intense, right? And many of us, you know, many people experienced it, right? That it just gets a bit much. Naturally, since we're so much in the course of faith, you know, like, this class cannot be totally loose from the material that we're dealing with there, because my brain is too much into it now to not kind of touch upon it. So we wrote a manual for that course, and in that manual there is a story which I took from a newsletter in South Africa from a university student. It's a girl who was from America, and she was studying in South Africa in a really fancy university in Cape Town, you know, like the Heavenly Planet University, like reserved for, which used to be white only and now has a little symbolic coloring as well. Anyway, that one, right? Nice university. Whoa, is it nice, you know. Super. Anyway, she became impressed by the Bhakti Yoga Society, which they had in South Africa, which is very nice. In every university in South Africa, ISKCON is a registered society, and therefore it is a student society, and therefore the university gives a place on campus, a hall or some facility for regular programs, and they get an office on campus, and in this way the students get, like, throughout the whole year, a whole Bhakti Yoga course, you know, from beginning to end, the whole Bhakti program, really. Yeah? So you can imagine, you make devotees from that, and you get good devotees from that, very intelligent people, educated people. So that's like one of the big things they have there. And so this girl came through that program, and then at one point, well, you know, got so convinced that she thought, let's try to stay in the temple during the holidays. And it was a total culture shock, right? Total culture shock, right? Everything was different, right? All the normal interaction was no longer there. Everything was changed, you know, okay? Gender separations, he said. She said even like the fact no toilet paper freaked her out. So many things freaked her out, right? You know, the typical no eating in the kitchen was like too much. Everything was too much, right? And that's, so she said, like, the culture shock was just too much, right? And she withdrew for that. Well, so this is like only one example that the culture shock of how this movement is very revolutionary and in many ways changing our life totally. I mean, the first time I had to walk in the street with a beat bag, I was very embarrassed about it, you know. It's like thinking what to do with this thing. Kind of first keeping it under my coat for a while, you know, hopefully, you know, and then other times in my pocket and chanting in my pocket. But to actually walk like that was intense. We all know that to walk around in a Hare Krishna dress, I mean, especially for a man, it's worse walking in a pink dhoti with a bald head than just walking in a sari, which is only an exotic dress. But this, what is this? What is this? You know, this is totally outrageous. And sure enough, you're going to get some comments, you know. The construction workers in Amsterdam, I mean, Amsterdam people are famous for, you know, having their heart on their tongue, you know, as we know from Brain City here. They have lots of remarks, you know, based on this stuff. I really love your dress, you know, lovely dress. Yeah. So complimenting you on the dress. It's like intense. Intense. With a very loud voice. Yeah. all kinds of things like this. So the revolution is, and the externals is certainly intense. Right? So she was right in this article that she wrote for our newsletter. That it's true, the culture shock of the externals can be intense. But of course, more intense, right? She didn't write about it, but I wrote about that, you know, that, like, in my case, okay, the externals were heavy, but the heaviest was really the four revelated principles and no illicit sex. I mean, that was a total revolution. Total, right? And that was super, super intense, right? And I really wasn't so convinced that I wanted to do that for the rest of my life. And then, okay, as soon as you're in the door, it's kind of addressed very firmly. You know, there are four regulating principles, and one ought to follow them, and you kind of get so much pressure on you, like, that you start to think about, well, I should be following that, maybe, you know, I should try. And, suddenly, you're going in really a high gear, right, and at a high pace into the revolution. So, all this is just to show that, like, our movement is sort of shock-wise, we're going forward, right? You join, and it's a big shock to your system, you know? Getting up so early, four regulated principles, and it takes years to kind of, like, get used to this way of life, right? And then after some time, it gets a little better, you know? You kind of get used to four regulated principles, and you kind of start to feel like anything outside it is so gross and so, like, really undesirable. You get a little bit in the mode of goodness, right? The thought of missing a box is something like, you know, ugh, yeah? Right? The idea of stepping in dirty clothes is inconceivable, right? You just, I mean, if there would be no clean cloth, I wouldn't know what to do. I mean, probably would stand there in my gum shell, you know, just stand in a gum shell. You know, put a sweater on and just about come out of my room that day. And he goes, what's wrong? I have no clothes. What can I do? Yeah. And it's like, because he really can't put on the dirty clothes of yesterday. But, I mean, I was sitting on an airport in Madrid, and there was a gentleman. He had a really spiffy black suit on. It was like really, really first class, you know, really, really nice. It's like a great cut, very elegant, you know, and he was sitting there in the seat, and I was sitting opposite to him, right? And then there was a little white spot on the sleeve, you know. So what did he do? He just licked his hand, and he started to smear his saliva all over. And then he got into it, just like a cat, you know, licking his hand all the time, and you know, he did the whole suit. And I had such a hard time to bite myself in my tongue, I almost said, what are you doing? You're smearing saliva all over your clothes, you know? And how are you doing? Yeah.
I know me looking at his face, I didn't think he would be able to handle that. So I didn't say it. But I had a hard time holding myself back. It was so awkward. So gradually, we do transform. Right? The mode of goodness becomes more natural to us, and spiritual life becomes more, goes into a different state. So I have a little analogy which I sometimes use about people who were born in a desert and grew up in an oasis, and that was all they knew. This oasis is the oasis of sense gratification. And, well, in that oasis of sense gratification, it's not ideal. It's a desert only. It's only dates and bananas, you know, little goat milk or camel milk, you know. Well, what can you do? Make some varieties, camel date milkshake, camel banana milkshake. You know, I mean, you know, what do you have, right? But a little sense gratification is there. It's not all the 27 flavors of the ice cream parlor. No, not like that. So life is a little steady, it's okay, it's not bad, but it's also not fully something, and some emptiness is still there. That's life in the oasis of sense gratification. One day a stranger appears, he brings exotic fruits no one has ever tasted,
everyone is just blown out, you know, like, wow, you know, new horizons is open, new dimensions, wow, I'm so inspired. Where did you get all this? I got this from a beautiful green house. Most people say, come on, come on, come on, come on. We're too old for fairy tales here. There is no green lands. Come on. You're fooling us. Stop fooling our legs. We know what life is like. It's one big desert. You hear me? I always describe the old people say. Now, I put many lines in their faces on a lifetime of getting realizations about the material world. Yeah. But some younger ones who are more idealistic, or some old ones who somehow or other maintain their innocence in it all, they say, no, no, it must be true, because fruits like this don't grow. The stranger says, let us go and proceed along the way and go to that place. Anyone who wants to come. Okay, there's a whole caravan that goes, and off they go into the desert on their camels. Camels make even more noise than horses, because camels have big, flat, round feet, you know. So galloping camels, I mean, I've heard them in Vrindavan, you think it's a stampede, you know. So all this going on through the desert there, and well, you can imagine what happens. Some people just lost it. So austere. You bring some sense gratification with you from the ocean of sense gratification, a whole bottle full. But if you go into the desert, the biggest water bottle looks small. I have experience in Rajasthan, you know, carrying huge bottles of water. And then after some time, you know, the level is going down. Gosh, you know? We need to start rationing the water. Yeah? It gets like that. And then, you know, we have to ration it a little more. Oh my God, you know, I hope we're going to get to some water soon, because otherwise it's going to be a pretty dry affair. So it's out there, not sense gratification anymore, and the hot sun of lust is burning on our head. And there we're riding in this camel. And the stranger...